This morning, America's First News starts right after this.
Great news. There's a quick way you could save money. Switch to Geico. Geico could help you get great coverage at a great price, and it only takes 15 minutes to see if you could save 15% or more on car insurance. Go to geico.com today and see how much you could save.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This morning, with your host, Gordon Deal.
Blocking further funding. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Koschenka on this Tuesday, March 5th. Glad you could spend some time with us. Here's what's coming up this hour.
The Senate appears to have the votes to stop President Trump's declaration of a national emergency designed to secure additional money for a border wall.
At least two dozen families are now homeless after a deadly tornado struck southeast Alabama. Hear tales of survival from Sunday's Twister.
With just weeks remaining to claim the prize, the winner of a $1.5 billion Mega Millions drawing has come forward in South Carolina.
And where some of the Democratic presidential candidates stand on the issue of free college.
It's probably not going to be, you know, as big of an issue as some of the marquee topics like healthcare or, you know, climate change that we've been hearing a lot about. But college affordability and dealing with student debt definitely are, you know, on the priority list for a lot of candidates this year.
Reporter Jillian Berman at MarketWatch looks at what Senators Sanders, Warren, Harris, and Klobuchar propose. That report in about 20 minutes. President Trump seems like he'll be using his veto power for the first time. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell says a resolution that would block the president from declaring a national emergency regarding border wall funding would pass the GOP-controlled Senate. That word came yesterday after Kentucky Senator Rand Paul became the fourth GOP senator to say he would vote for the resolution of disapproval pushed by Democrats, giving it enough support to pass the Senate. He doesn't like the White House strategy.
We had a big debate in our country. We debated for a couple of months about how much money should be spent on the wall. And I probably would have spent more. I think we need a wall. I think we need security at the border.
Mr. Trump has promised a veto to override it. Support is needed from two-thirds of both chambers, which is unlikely. Unhappy with the $1.3 billion allocated by Congress for a wall, the president last month declared a national emergency and designated money from the military and other sources. House Democrats want records from more than 80 people and organizations related to President Trump's business dealings, interactions with the Justice Department, and communications with Russian President Vladimir Putin. Letters sent by the House Judiciary Committee yesterday are designed to find out if there's enough material to remove him from office. That committee has the power to begin impeachment proceedings. California Republican Congressman Devin Nunes is the ranking member on the committee.
Clearly, the Democrats want to, they've left collusion, they've left any collusion with the Russians, and now they're on to going through all of the president's businesses, is what it appears.
Mr. Trump asked if he would comply with the committee's document requests, said he cooperates, quote, all the time with everybody, and added, it's all a hoax. The House Judiciary panel sent document requests to his former White House staff, executives from his real estate business, the Trump Organization, including the president's sons, and others. Republicans in recent years have gained access to information long considered too sensitive to share with Congress. Now that House Democrats are in charge, the tables are turning as party lawmakers embark on a wide-ranging inquiry into President Trump and his administration. Wall Street Journal reporter Byron Tao says the fight over access is poised to grow even more acrimonious as the Democrats' newfound control of the House gives them new power to demand records that could be embarrassing or incriminating to Mr. Trump. Byron covers the Justice Department. What do we have?
Well, over the last few years, Congress, under Republican leadership, has won access to a lot of pretty top-secret documents, specifically related to intelligence gathering or law enforcement. So, for example, the Republican-led House Intelligence Committee won access to a bunch of surveillance material related to the Trump investigation. Some other committees have won access to the underlying documents that were related to the Hillary Clinton email investigation. And now Democrats are in charge of the House, and they're poised to rely on the same sort of precedents that Republicans have set to try to win access to documents that relate to Donald Trump.
This sort of sounds like what comes around goes around?
That's pretty much what it is. So by and large, going back a long time, there's a certain class of documents that the government, specifically the Justice Department, often thought was too sensitive to share with Congress. And that typically included stuff about sources and methods of intelligence gathering or law enforcement activity. And it also included information about criminal probes, especially when someone hasn't been charged with a crime. But starting in 2015, 2016, when Hillary Clinton was under a lot of scrutiny in the Benghazi investigation and later her emails, and then going into the post-election period when Donald Trump started to be under scrutiny, Republicans got access to a heck of a lot of information that was once considered far too classified. And President Donald Trump, in some cases, even sided with lawmakers in Congress over his own Justice Department officials saying, wait, that's too sensitive. And now that precedent is set to backfire on him, potentially, now that Democrats are running the House.
You know, there was I was looking at some of the comments to your story online, and it was at least a couple of people said something along the lines of, great, this is our congressional leadership these days, where the approach is, well, they did it first.
Well, I mean, that's an interesting point. But at the same time, you know, these precedents really do matter, as one lawyer I was talking to told me, that, you know, when you give information of a certain kind to a Congress that's friendly to you, it's very hard to turn around and deny that information to a Congress that's unfriendly to you. Generally speaking, the government is under obligation to act in a sort of neutral way, even when you don't like the information that's being shared, or you don't like the outcome, or it's not politically advantageous to share that information. And this really could matter in court fights. If some of this ends up in court and a judge says, well, you gave information about surveillance to a Republican Congress, why are you withholding the same sort of information from a Democratic Congress? So by and large, these are sort of legal precedents, and they're certainly norms, and certainly the Department of Justice is interested in maintaining some sort of norm-based approach to how they deal with Congress and congressional requests for information.
We're speaking with Wall Street Journal Justice Department reporter Byron Tao. He's written a piece entitled Democrats Adopt GOP Strategy in Fight for Trump Probe Information. Is there nothing too sensitive these days when it comes to gaining access to this information?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, we've certainly seen the boundaries of what's considered acceptable to share with Congress shift. You know, part of the fear of sharing material with Congress is that there are 435 members of the House of Representatives, another 100 in the Senate, that it's a leaky place, that it's hard to keep things under wraps there, that people gossip and talk. And so, by and large, the Hill is known as a place where it's more difficult to keep a secret than, say, the Justice Department or the Central Intelligence Agency. But at the other hand, there are ways to sort of mitigate the ways you share information with Congress. So sometimes you see them holding it in what's called a SCIF, which is where you handle classified information. Sometimes they insist that members, if they want to see some material, truck on down to the CIA or the Justice Department to review it there, but they can't take it with them. So certainly administrations have found ways to accommodate congressional requests for very sensitive information over the past, and I expect they'll continue to try to work with them in the future.
Thanks, Byron. That's Wall Street Journal reporter Byron Tao. He covers the Justice Department. By the way, in an opinion piece, Byron York in the Washington Examiner said that Democrats have decided to impeach Mr. Trump and are now simply doing the legwork involved in making that happen. He says, and that means the debate among House Democrats will be a tactical one. What is best in terms of time and way to go forward, rather than a more fundamental discussion of whether the president should be impeached. It's 15 minutes after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for being with us. At least 23 people are dead, including three children under the age of 10, after a tornado struck southeast Alabama. It's the worst tornado outbreak in the U.S. in nearly 6 years. Happened Sunday afternoon. Search and rescue efforts continued yesterday. Kim Serta is lucky, despite the fact Mother Nature used broken trees as spears to punch holes in her house. She survived by clinging to a shoe rack in her bedroom closet. At one point, she felt the twister beginning to suck her through the roof, but it dropped her. Hers is among 24 families in the town of Smith's Station that are now homeless. Alabama Governor Kay Ivey.
We have a job to do. We must build back Lee County to its feet. Today, all of Alabama is focused on Lee County.
69-year-old Sam Cook went to check on his 90-year-old mother-in-law and came within inches of death when a giant tree limb crashed on top of his truck just as he got out. This portion of the program is brought to you by Lightstream. The average interest rate on a credit card debt is over 18% APR. Have you looked at your interest rate lately? When you do, I also recommend taking a look at Lightstream. With Lightstream, you can refinance your high-interest credit card balances and save with a credit card consolidation loan. Get a rate as low as 6.14% APR with AutoPay. The rate is fixed. It will never go up. You can even get your money on the day you apply. When you have good credit, you deserve great service and a low-interest fixed-rate loan from Lightstream. That's lending uncomplicated. Want to save even more? Our listeners get an additional interest rate discount. The only way to get the discount is to go to lightstream.com/deal. That's Lightstream, LIGHTSTREAM, lightstream.com/deal. Subject to credit approval, rate includes a 0.50% auto pay discount. Terms and conditions apply, and offers are subject to change without notice. Visit lightstream.com/deal for more information. Again, lightstream.com/deal. It's 21 minutes after the hour on this morning. Jennifer Koschenka is here with more of America's First News.
Gordon, the NSA is considering ending a once secret surveillance program that collects hundreds of millions of phone records because it lacks operational value. The Wall Street Journal says terminating the program, which was exposed publicly by former intelligence contractor Edward Snowden nearly 6 years ago, would represent a stunning concession from a spy agency that once argued the collection of call data was vital to national security. An National Security Advisor for Republican congressional leadership says the NSA hadn't used the program in the past 6 months and might not seek its renewal when it expires at the end of the year. Democrats are launching a sweeping new probe of President Trump, an investigation that threatens to shadow the president through the 2020 election season, with potentially damaging inquiries into his White House, campaign, and family businesses. House Judiciary Committee Chairman Jerry Nadler says his panel is beginning the probe into possible obstruction of justice, corruption, and abuse of power, and is sending document requests to 81 people linked to the president and his associates. President Trump was asked about the Democrats' move.
It's a political hoax. There's no collusion. There's no anything. Folks, go and eat up. Eat up.
The broad investigation could be setting the stage for an impeachment effort, although Democratic leaders have pledged to investigate other avenues first. A London man appears to be free of the AIDS virus after a stem cell transplant, the second such success. The therapy had an early success with a U.S. man treated in Germany who is 12 years post-transplant and still free of HIV. Until now, he was the only person thought to have been cured of HIV. Apparently, that Mega Millions lottery ticket didn't end up in the trash after all. Lottery officials say a South Carolina resident stepped forward to claim the $1.5 billion jackpot from last October, but elected to remain anonymous. Janice Curtis is the mayor of Simpsonville, where the ticket was sold.
Everyone is going to surround that person and be protective of their identity if they do know who it is, simply because of the safety factors involved.
It's the largest jackpot payout to a single winner in U.S. history.
Not for nothing, by the way. I love the anonymity option.
Yeah, but can you really stay that way?
Not when you plunk down, what, $877 million in the lump sum payment?
It's too much to think about. Forget it.
Walking into the bank with that check?
Yeah.
Can I just take one more look at that before we deposit it? Thanks, Jen. 23 minutes after the hour. In the first few months of the primary contest for the Democratic presidential nomination, candidates have started to stake out their positions on whether to make college free in some form or provide some kind of relief for student loan borrowers. Market Watch reporter Jillian Berman has a snapshot about what some of the candidates are supporting. Jillian, how big of an issue will this be on the campaign trail?
It's probably not going to be, you know, as big of an issue as some of the marquee topics like healthcare or, you know, climate change that we've been hearing a lot about. But college affordability and dealing with student debt definitely are, you know, on the priority list for a lot of candidates this year.
And you made an interesting point. This kind of was barely on the radar screen just a few years ago.
Yeah, so we've kind of seen an evolution. The last time that President Obama ran for president, there wasn't really a ton of discussion, sort of small solutions at the margins had been proposed. Then obviously in 2016, we saw Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton talk about free college and tuition-free college and things like that. And now, you know, we're at a point where it's an issue that most of the candidates are talking about in some form.
All right. So who stands where? Give us some names and what their positions are.
Yeah, so Bernie Sanders is, you know, is back with his you know, free college views. He hasn't he has yet to sort of release his plan, but you know, he's sponsored a bill in the Senate about, you know, that would create free public college. Obviously, we know what he advocated for in 2016, so it wouldn't be a surprise to see that from him again. Elizabeth Warren has, you know, backed his bill as well as another one, you know, that's in the Senate. And she historically has been, you know, really aggressive about, you know, sort of issues with the student loan and for-profit college industry. So, you know, she hasn't totally said what her plans are on this issue yet, but we can probably expect to see, you know, to see something there. And then, you know, Kamala Harris, when she announced her campaign launch, she mentioned this issue, and she mentioned it again in her CNN town hall. So those are some of the, you know, kind of big names that we've heard talk about this.
Are any Democrats at this point not on board with some sort of free tuition or debt-free college approach?
Yeah, so Amy Klobuchar, the senator from Minnesota, she, in her CNN town hall, she was asked point blank sort of whether she supported free tuition for four-year college and for all, I guess. And she said no, though she did, you know, kind of go on to say that she supports 2 years of free community college. So, you know, she's not totally opposed to the idea.
Thanks, Jillian. MarketWatch personal finance reporter Jillian Berman in New York. 30 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. No one compliments you when their paycheck is correct, but make one mistake and you risk alienating your entire workforce. With Kronos, we make sure your payroll is done right the first time, from punch to paycheck. Embedded checklists, simplified workflows, a single source of truth. HR, payroll, talent, and timekeeping in one unified system, all with a proven implementation approach and simplified, transparent pricing. Learn more at kronos.com/payroll. Kronos, workforce innovation that works.
I used to have a sweet tooth, had it removed when I was a kid. So what do I crave instead of chocolate? A big red box from Grainger. Grainger satisfies my craving for great customer service with 24/7 support, effortless ordering, and same-day pickup or next-day delivery options. No busy signals, no cavities. I love Grainger. You know why? Because when it comes to reliable product and technical support, Grainger's got your back. Call or click Grainger.com to see for yourself. Grainger. For the ones who get it done.
America's First News is online all the time. Follow us on Twitter at This Morning Show. Like us on Facebook or send us an email. This Morning at CompassMediaNetworks.com.
Thanks for spending time with us on this Tuesday, March 5. Gordon Deal, Jennifer Koshenka, some of our top stories and headlines. The Senate has the votes to block Trump's border wall move, setting up a presidential veto. The House votes tomorrow condemning anti-Semitism after comments from Minnesota Congresswoman Ilhan Omar. Wall Street Journal says attorneys for Michael Cohen raised the issue of a pardon last spring. Days after a massive stroke, actor Luke Perry has died. He was just 52. And the college football team helping out victims of the Alabama tornado. That story in about 20 minutes. Time now for a business update, and it's brought to you by Capital One. Capital One is reimagining banking, offering accounts with no fees or minimums that can be opened in 5 minutes. Capital One, what's in your wallet? Capital One NA. Reports that Amazon is launching its own line of grocery stores has raised eyebrows about how their debut could ricochet through America's trillion-dollar grocery industry. Amazon owns Whole Foods, but that business revolves around higher-priced natural and organic groceries. Now, as its rivals amp up their own grocery delivery and pickup services, experts tell Washington Post reporter Rachel Siegel that Amazon could be forging a path to lock into another part of customers' shopping habits and convert those people to Prime members along the way. Remember, the Washington Post and Amazon are both owned by Jeff Bezos. Rachel, how would this work?
This would be a completely distinct brand, its own line of grocery stores, so far it seems in major cities. So it's kind of interesting to think about, you know, how their own grocery line would not compete directly with Whole Foods, how it could further inform their pickup and delivery options, and obviously also how it could change competition as far as the trillion-dollar grocery store industry in the U.S. as it stands now.
Yeah, so what are some observers saying about that?
They are saying that Amazon would have to open many, 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 many stores in order to compete with the likes of Kroger and Walmart, but it's also not necessarily the case that that is going to be Amazon's direct competition. You know, it's possible that they could be looking to take some of the market share away from smaller chains, mom-and-pop stores. Again, a little bit hard to tell exactly, but you assume that Amazon is going to find a strategy not to compete directly with Whole Foods that could put some of the smaller chains and mom-and-pop stores at a little bit more risk.
What does Amazon have in place, let's say, that makes it seem like they would be successful in the grocery business?
Right. So when they bought Whole Foods a couple of years ago, that was a pretty big shift, both in terms of having a handle around the grocery industry a little bit more broadly, but also as an entrance into brick-and-mortar stores. So, you know, thinking about all of the data that Amazon's been able to cull from American shoppers and their grocery habits, that's certainly been a huge data point for them. On the flip side, we've also seen Amazon make a pretty big push toward its brick-and-mortar fleet of Amazon Go stores. As a reminder, those are, you know, pretty high-tech stores, no cashiers, no checkout lines. There are cameras that follow you everywhere you go, see what you pick up, see what you put down, and you basically just walk out and the turnstile generates a receipt for you. I don't know this for sure, but my guess would be that Amazon would be trying to make its grocery stores as accessible as possible and wouldn't necessarily, you know, implement that kind of technology in its new grocery stores, but who knows? And if this is a plan that they're looking to take years down the line, there could be something that we haven't even seen from them yet.
And I presume that you could buy groceries then on Amazon.com, which might even get prominent display on the website?
Maybe. You know, that's one possibility. You know, Amazon already has so much data on its prime shoppers that analysts were saying that this could be a pretty big way to get a sense of, you know, the kinds of purchases that people make literally every single day, often repeat purchases, as a way of, you know, really gaining a pretty strong profile as to the things that people are buying day in and day out. Analysts are also saying that their own line of grocery stores could be a huge way to bump up their prime subscriptions, you know, if there are discounts for prime members, things like that. It's really just sort of an endless possibility given how many different ways Amazon has a lens into our lives. And if grocery is another way that they're looking to do that, then they could be a pretty strong player in the field.
We're speaking with Rachel Siegel, business reporter at The Washington Post. She's written a piece entitled How Amazon Could Change the Country's Grocery Game. What about buying another operation, like some regional chain? Would that work or fit into their plans?
It could. You know, again, these questions are a little bit hard to pin down now. You know, the major players like Kroger and Walmart just have so many stores and have such a wide reach that I don't necessarily think that they would be looking to swallow up some of those stores. But if we're looking at, you know, more regional, smaller chains, you know, with maybe a handful of stores here and there, it's entirely possible that Amazon might be looking to, you know, take up some of a market share in one particular city by eliminating a smaller tier or a smaller scale grocery chain. You know, it's definitely something to be keeping an eye on. It's just a little too early to tell exactly what their plans are.
I think you touched on it a little bit, but kind of revisit the why. Why would Amazon do this, right? Because I think grocery store margins are not that great to begin with.
They're really not. Grocery is an incredibly difficult business to enter into. But, you know, if we think about all of the data points that Amazon has on our lives and all of the different ways in which Amazon has some sort of lens into our shopping habits, grocery is a really big part of what Americans are shopping for day in and day out, a really good barometer of the kinds of things they put their money towards, that they value, that they appreciate. You know, Whole Foods also is a relatively niche market. It's more expensive. It's got a focus on natural and organic products. And if Amazon is trying to branch out and get a little bit more of a sample of what all kinds of American shoppers are buying, then a line of, you know, more mainstream, more traditional grocery stores could really be the way to do it.
Thanks, Rachel. It's Rachel Siegel, Washington Post reporter. Reminder, by the way, we can connect on social media. You can friend us on Facebook. You can follow us on Twitter, at This Morning Show. You can follow me directly on Twitter as well, if you can stand some cynicism and sarcasm. I'm at Gordon Deal. It's 20 minutes in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News.
Thanks for being with us. Beyond the headlines now, this morning's Mike Gavin is here with a look at some of the other stories you'll be talking about this morning.
Good morning. Well, there are a few things that can brighten up a jury Monday better than a brawl between companies on social media. The latest dust-up involves Dunkin' Donuts and McDonald's. Dunkin' is hitting back at McDonald's over the fast food chain's recent release of donut sticks, a treat eerily similar to Dunkin's own donut fries. McDonald's announced the upcoming release of its donut sticks in February. Dunkin' Donuts and others were quick to notice the similarities to Dunkin's fries. And though originally Dunkin' said they were not surprised by McDonald's imitation and didn't seem bothered by the idea, it seems as if the tides have turned with their mocking tweet yesterday, which shows some of their donuts stored in a box that looks like McDonald's iconic Big Mac box, with Dunkin' claiming that is the blueprint to their new donut packaging. Social media users seem split by the jab, with some supporting Team Dunkin' and others pointing out that the chain's insecurity might be because the McDonald's donut sticks actually taste better than the ones offered by Dunkin'.
Really?
Yeah, hitting them at their own game, I guess, on this one. See, my guess through all this is that a year from now, both of these are going to be off the menu. I just don't know. I mean, look, I haven't researched it like they have, but I don't feel like there's that much demand for sticks of donuts.
I'm with you. Aren't they just churros, really?
That's what it seems like, right? I mean, to me, you know, without some kind of frosting on it or jelly inside or something like that, I don't want the outside of the donut. I want the stuff that's on top or in the middle,
right?
As far as I'm concerned.
Right, just Dunkin' Donuts. Just stick to, like, the Boston cream.
Boston cream.
You coconut or, like, toasted almond donuts. Everything else is pointless. And then the good coffee is that's all you need.
Yes, the good coffee. That's the most important part.
McDonald's, give me the burgers.
Right.
And if you would set up shop next to each other so I could walk from one to the next.
That would be excellent. Ideal. And, Gordon, there was a catfight of sorts that broke out in China recently. According to Fox News, several customers in China were caught on camera engaged in physical altercations over a Starbucks limited edition cat paw cup. In a video taken at a Starbucks store, three people, reportedly scalpers, were seen pushing and pulling at each other's clothes. In another store, a man was seen pushing and possibly taking a swing at another customer in line. The see-through double-walled tumbler mug was designed so the interior cup, which is a slight pinkish color, is the shape of a cat's paw that becomes visible when liquid is poured. The $30 Gordon limited edition mug first went on sale a week ago in select stores throughout China and sold out the same day. Customers started to line up for the release the night before. However, because of the high demand of customers who wanted to get their paws on one of these cups, Starbucks made 1,000 of the cups available for purchase online for Chinese customers. Those reportedly sold out in less than a tenth of a second. Starbucks put up the remaining 3,000 cups for sale online on Friday. That batch reportedly sold out again in under 1 second.
Who anticipates promotional stuff this much?
Who doesn't make enough of these things? In China, there's a billion people in China. You make 1,000 cups, 3,000 cups.
I'll tell you who fights over this stuff.
Yeah.
People who have no friends and no hobbies. 13 minutes now in front of the hour.
There's nothing small about your business. Your passion, your hours, your reputation, it's all huge. Your partnerships, even bigger. With Dell Small Business Technology Advisors, you'll get the tech, advice, and one-on-one partnership to help your business grow. Because with reliable Dell PCs with Intel Core processors, you can focus on what matters most, getting business done. Call 877-BUY-DELL to speak with an advisor today. That's 877-BUY-DELL.
Thanks for joining us. If frigid temps weren't cruel enough, winter also marks static electricity season, where you get zapped when touching things like a doorknob or a light switch. That's caused by a lack of humidity. You know, a boiling pot of water on the stove can help that. Obviously, a humidifier can too. So can houseplants. USA Today has other solutions. Number one, go without wool. Wool socks let your body build up a charge until you ground yourself by touching a metal faucet. A cotton hoodie and cotton socks make for safer choices. Number two, say no to rubber. Shoes with rubber soles will let static electricity build up and build on your body. Leather is better in this case. And finally, the jolts you can get when exiting your car can be solved in a couple of ways. First, rub the car's seats with dryer sheets or spray them with fabric softener every few weeks, or touching a metal door handle before leaving your seat. When entering the car, just touch the metal part of your key and the metal door handle to shake off a spark.
It's 8 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning. Jennifer Koshenka is back with more of America's First News.
Florida residents in Alabama, Georgia, Florida, and South Carolina are cleaning up after at least 28 tornadoes ripped through the area Sunday, killing at least 23 in Alabama. Three children were among the victims. Lee County Sheriff Jay Jones.
I love this county, and it's extremely upsetting to me to see these people hurting like this.
Those killed lived in roughly a 1 square mile area of the town of Beauregard, a community of about 9,000. Preliminary reports indicate the deadly twister reached an EF4 category with winds estimated at 170 miles an hour. An attorney for Michael Cohen, Donald Trump's former personal lawyer, raised the possibility of a pardon with attorneys for the president and his company after federal agents raided Cohen's properties in April. The Wall Street Journal says Cohen's attorney at the time discussed the possibility of a pardon with lawyers for President Trump in the weeks after the FBI raided Cohen's home office and hotel room. Conversations among those parties are now being probed by congressional investigators. North Carolina's Elections Board has set dates for the redo of a congressional election it ordered after finding the results of the 2018 vote were tainted by a ballot fraud scheme. The new primary election for the state's 9th district in the House will take place on May 14th. The race is the country's last unsettled 2018 congressional contest. Luke Perry's family says they're thankful for the support in the wake of the actor's death. Perry became a heartthrob for playing Dylan McKay on Beverly Hills 90210.
Let me tell you something, just so you know in advance. I'm not in a good mood today. In fact, I'm feeling a little hostile.
Perry had been hospitalized since last Wednesday after suffering a major stroke. Aside from his work on 90210, the 52-year-old had a long TV and film career. He most recently played Archie Andrews' dad on the TV series Riverdale. He's also due to appear in Quentin Tarantino's Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, due out in July.
Man, that 52 years old.
Way too young.
Holy cow. Thank you, Jen. 6 minutes in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Members of Auburn's football team helped victims of the tornado yesterday by delivering supplies to hard-hit Lee County. The community of Beauregard, which took the brunt of the storm, is just 9 miles southeast of the school. 247sports.com says about 30 players and coaches from the Tigers football program delivered supplies to the Providence Baptist Church in Beauregard and the Greater Peace Baptist Church in Opelika. Auburn officials said earlier yesterday it was awaiting word from local authorities on how else it can help in the wake of the large twister. Several Auburn employees, including at least one in the athletics department, were directly affected by the storm. One employee lost family members. A member of Auburn's basketball staff also lives in the community struck by the tornado. Auburn and Alabama's basketball programs are planning a way to support the storm victims during its upcoming game tonight in Tuscaloosa, which is about 3 hours west of the tornado strike. That'll do it for this hour. For Jennifer Koshenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News. Great news! There's a quick way you could save money. Switch to Geico. Geico could help you get great coverage at a great price, and it only takes 15 minutes to see if you could save 15% or more on car insurance. Go to geico.com today and see how much you could save.